asking him to support a pending Senate bill that would legalize needle exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
I might try and find that. I don't know.
Okay. I have a lot of debris here in the studio. I can try and do that. Anything you need to say about the upcoming... I guess you're not really involved that much in Food Not Bombs at the moment, right?
Well, I think it's Food Not Bombs is a good idea as an alternate thing for people to do if people are bored with their current lives or upset with what they're doing right now. They can stop their industrial jobs and go and join Food Not Bombs, which isn't going to be a lot of fun, but it is an alternate way of living instead of competing in the market for jobs and more toys than your paycheck.
More magic cards.
More magic cards, exactly. Instead of doing that, Food Not Bombs is a cooperative organization that provides for food needs.
Yes, and one occasionally sees you around the Food Not Bombs meals. But I understand you yourself have suspended activity with Food Not Bombs. Is this true?
Yes.
And why is that?
Oh, I don't know if I want to get into it at length. I've been doing Food Not Bombs work for several years. I was tired.
I see. And is Food Not Bombs continuing? I think I hear another Food Not Bombs voice in the background there, but perhaps it'd be inappropriate to drag her to the phone at this point. I don't know. Is there anything that... that she would like to say regarding upcoming Food Not Bombs events on the air?
Let me check.
Okay.
She says that international gathering is coming up in San Francisco.
Oh, it is. Yes.
If you weren't aware of that.
Yes. Actually, I think I may have heard of that, and I'm sure that our listeners will hear about that regularly on the air. I'm looking for a flyer in the studio, and probably one here, but I don't see it at the moment. But there is an international gathering for Food Not Bombs coming up in the next week. I think it starts June 15th. While I have you on the line, Robert, you were a friend of Linda Edwards, Linda the Lark.
Yeah.
Do you have any anything you want to say about her life and about her memory and about her legacy and about her at all? She, as we know, as I've been saying, she died last Saturday of liver cancer. You knew her very well. You might want to say something about that. Maybe not. I don't know.
Well, I met Linda at the town clock in 1991 when there was a vigil there, which actually lasted for 3.5 months, a vigil opposing the war in the Persian Gulf. And I met Linda there, and the whole time that I knew her, she was a very strong activist who she knew what she believed. She knew that, that the city government was oppressive, and the national government was, you know, fascistic, and she was unremitting in her belief and very, very strong in her opposition to injustice perpetrated by the government. That's how I remember her.
You went to court numerous times in your own charges around the town clock, peace vigil, and subsequent protests for homeless rights, and do you have any memories of her in court situations, or do you have any other memories subsequent to your meeting her about Linda that kind of stand out?
Well, there's one court situation that I remember. I can recount that.
Go ahead.
Although actually, I was in court, in Judge Heather Morse's court, and I was being held in contempt of court because I hadn't paid my infraction fines, and I was arguing that I couldn't be thrown in jail for unpaid infraction fines, and that Judge Heather Morse decided that she was going to hold me in contempt, and I was being very calm and reasonable and talking softly, and so Judge Heather Morse decided to hold me in contempt and had me taken by the bailiff away, straight away to jail, and Linda stood up and began screaming at the judge, essentially, and telling her that she was a fucking asshole or something. Using all kinds of other expletives, etc. But Heather Morse didn't have the courage to find Linda in contempt.
Wow.
That's one memory.
Regarding that contempt, that I guess you were using what we call the Edwards-Flory defense. in terms of infractions, non-vehicular infractions, or perhaps just infractions generally. You were using a defense that, kind of a very special defense that both you and Linda pioneered, and that I think Wanton Dave is now taken to a higher court, or at least part of that defense, or the question of community service for doing infractions. Do you have anything you want to tell the audience about the current status of homeless rights in court?
Well, the California State Legislature, not happy with misdemeanors and felonies, created a new class of law, and I don't know when they did that, but they created a new class of law called infractions. And in an infraction, which is defined by Penal Code 19.6, I believe, a person is not entitled to a public defender, nor are they entitled to a trial by jury, so that they have to represent themselves unless they can afford an attorney. And also, their case is decided by a judge. And so this is a clear violation of due process, in that all persons accused of a crime are supposed to, according to the federal constitution, have both trial by jury and representation by counsel. But the legislature thought they could get around this by saying, well, if a person is accused of infractions, then they can't be thrown in jail. The only possible penalty is a fine.
Mm-hmm.
And so laws like this are used to harass poor people because, laws like the local sleeping ban, and also the laws against sitting, the laws against panhandling, those are all examples of infraction laws. And, laws like these are used to harass poor people who are oftentimes found guilty and ordered to pay a fine, and then they, of course, don't have any money to pay the fine, so they're given the reasonable alternative of community service hours. And it is actually my belief, and Wanton Dave's belief, and probably several other people's belief, that the court has no authority to order community service hours, that if you request community service hours, the court can grant them, but the court doesn't have any authority to order them. So we're trying to resist being railroaded by these infraction laws, these laws that deny you even, the legal system isn't exactly on your side, but these infraction laws deny you even the small amount of due process that the legal system claims you have a right to. And so we're resisting being punished in any way from these laws, saying, well, the only possible punishment is for a fine, and the way that the court can enforce a fine is by same way that it enforces other money judgments in general, which is by suing people and garnishing their wages and attaching their bank accounts. And the fact that some people are poor and don't have bank accounts
is tough titty.
It doesn't mean that the court can throw you in jail. So I've already been thrown in jail for without representation of counsel by Heather Morse in that one case for 5 sleeping charges.
Hmm.
And I was just held in contempt of court by Judge Barton for failure to perform community service hours that he had ordered over my objection.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, people who are interested in spending a lot of time in court might want to get more information on this.
Well, I understand Dave Jacobs had a hearing on Friday and regarding some of these issues. Do you know what happened there?
He had a hearing with the 88th.
Today is the 9th.
Yeah, he had a hearing yesterday morning. That was our report. And I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I think, as I understand it, go ahead.
Oh, he has oral arguments on the 20th in San Jose, the 4th District Appellate Court, where Judge Barton held him in contempt also for not completing community service hours. And he is having that contempt reviewed by the 4th District Appellate Court.
So folks who want to attend that hearing in San Jose, was it 4:30 in the afternoon or something like that? Or
I actually don't know what time.
I hope we'll have more information on that later, because I think it's a very important defense, although it's never really been raised much that I've heard it by other people in other jurisdictions. But certainly could be raised extensively here in Santa Cruz if people wanted to, against the enforcement of the sleeping ban, the harassment enforcement of the sleeping ban against poor people, as well as these other anti-homeless laws. Well, Robert, you've anything else you wish to pass on to us?
Well, I just want to say that as far as the needle exchange goes, the government wants people to die and get sick. The government supplies most of the drugs that injection drug users use, and then they make it unsafe for people to use these drugs. And the point of needle exchange programs is to say, well, if you're going to use drugs, then you know let's at least do it in a safe way and use a clean needle every time, and be sure and use the alcohol wipe because you don't want to push any dirt under the skin. And that's what needle exchange is doing, is trying to reduce the amount of harm that intravenous or injection drug users potentially subject themselves to. And at the same time, these programs are illegal, and the government, the state government, doesn't want people who use injection drugs to do it in the same way.
Do you know much about the rise of needle use here in Santa Cruz? If there is a rise, has there been a rise, a fall? Do you have any sense on that?
I really don't know.
Well, for those who are interested, again, in Santa Cruz needle exchange, the number is 427-4557, and just give them a call, 427-4557, and give us a call at 427-3772, because we're going to give Robert a break here and let him get back to his breakfast or his lunch or who knows what he's doing. And I appreciate your calling, Robert.
Oh, all right. I'll talk to you later, Robert.
Call again anytime.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you are listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, a Monday and Friday show from 10 to 12 on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. Again, our call-in number is 427-3772. And we are eager, yes, eager to hear from you, particularly since our guests haven't showed, although Robert, who was one of our guests, has showed by telephone. Thank you, Robert, for calling in. What have we got here? Oh, I've got a few notes here that might be of interest to you. Free Radio Santa Cruz has recently evolved. It came about through connections in Berkeley, Free Radio Berkeley, which has been going on for a year or two. With some harassment from the FCC, but going on regularly. But actually, Free Radio perhaps can be said, not perhaps, maybe it originated, we could say that, or perhaps we could say it certainly has an earlier antecedent in Illinois, in Springfield, Illinois, where a station there, a microwave station that broadcasted only within a few blocks, I think, broadcast partying with records for the first year, and they kind of partied down. But then an incident of police brutality encouraged them to use the radio to establish a network throughout the community so people could say what they thought and exchange information, exchange views. And Free Radio can have quite an impact, and I'm taking a lot of this from activist and radio commentator Cornerstone Carol Denny in Berkeley. Carol is telling me that when Free Radio promotes an event up in Berkeley, you get twice the attendance, although this may mean doubling from 15 to 30. It's still significant for small events. So I think it's really important what's going on here with Free Radio, and I encourage those who want to get on the air to give a call to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772. If you're calling about getting on the air, give a call after this show, after at noon, and you can talk to someone who can give you more information. While I'm on the air, I'm kind of trying to do a number of things at once, and I can't really give you much information other than what I'm telling you now. But the radio waves are free, and they're beginning to open up to people who want to use them, and you should take advantage of this. Well, here's another call coming in. Maybe someone is doing just that.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey, it's great. Let's see, this is Al, and I don't know if Free Radio can be an addiction, but when I should be doing other things like applying for magic cards and whatever.
Yes, you should.
I find myself listening to you guys at the same time.
That's great.
I wanted to relate an experience I've had with the needle exchange program, and then also make a point about how all these laws don't just necessarily oppress the poor. With the whole needle exchange program, I'm not an IV user myself or whatever, but what I've seen, you know, it seems to be a good, sensible idea. In a more sane society, though, I don't think it would even exist. I think anyone should be able to purchase needles if they wish at any Long's drugstore, anywhere else. Or I believe that if people want to give out needles to promote safer drug use or whatever, that should be possible. I don't think government has any business, regulating that sort of thing.
You work with Needle Exchange yourself?
No, I do not.
Go ahead.
But I have observed some things in terms of maybe some responsibility that's necessary. I spend a lot of time wandering around at night and that sort of thing, and I have seen exchanges going on. And I was amazed to see that, you know, it isn't just poor people showing up. I saw plenty of Mercedes and BMWs parked around the corner.
Really?
With blondes with stiletto heels or whatever running out to do a
needle
exchange.
I better go to a couple of these needle exchanges, I think.
So, anyway. But, I mean, I did observe other things and maybe a little irritation on people who would other be, amongst people who might otherwise be supportive. For instance, I know somebody who was putting on some sort of public performance, had to, of course, acquire, like, chemical toilets or whatever for that performance, and Needle Exchange happened to be in the area, and it's sort of a generalization, but most people who abuse drugs are maybe not that responsible, and they were doing things like busting off the locks and taking craps in there and leaving their needles around where, you know, somebody else could prick themselves on it, and that part of it's not that responsible. But I'm not in any way putting down the Needle Exchange, because anything I've seen from any of those people has been, you know, highly responsible.
You're just urging greater responsibility by the users of the
program. Yeah, and of course they should get off drugs. But I think it's a good idea, and I think most people, no matter what their political bent, I think should support something like that. It should be a free society where people can buy or give away whatever they want, whether it happens to be food or needles or anything like that, as long as it's done in a somewhat responsible manner.
I have to agree with you.
But the other point I wanted to get about laws that oppress not only the poor but middle class people, because they've developed laws which tend to extract money from people if you have money, which is a form of enslavement, because if you happen to already be into this system, what you're doing basically oftentimes is giving up a portion of your life to get your cash or whatever, and
kind of a form of blackmail.
But yeah, it's a form of blackmail, and so for me, I see all these little petty fines constantly as some sort of revenue gathering type of thing that they use to harass people who do have money, or just use, you know, use it as a way to mine the middle class. Whereas somebody who is very wealthy, you know, it's nothing out of their pocket. Or, for instance, our littering laws, a lot of times you can get off by just paying the fine. Now, if you happen to be a wealthy person, it may not mean that much. Whereas if you're a poor person, it does mean a lot. And it might be better to take people who are able to pay the fine and actually put them out on the road picking up the trash, you know, some sort of community service. So I don't necessarily agree that, you know, forced community service is a bad idea. But the point is, I think these laws harass everybody, and I don't necessarily think that they're just targeted at the poor. Yes, they are used that way in certain places, or, you know, certain ones may be that way, but I see them as a burden on the rest of society, too.
I hear you. In fact, the next thing I'm going to be discussing is the helmet law, which we had a good decision on a couple days ago. I've got some good news to announce to everybody. But I'm going to sign off with you, Al, unless you've got something more you want to say.
Okay. I guess that's it, but keep up the good work. And it's great to have you guys on the air.
Thank you.
And I think there should be a lot more of these little stations.
Hey, start one.
Yeah, the only concern is, you know, that it's not overlapping on other people's airwaves and that sort of thing.
Right.
There needs to be a certain amount of regulation.
Yeah, we hope we've resolved that.
But as far as I know, there doesn't seem to be any problem with mixing signals that I've seen.
Great.
So, great. Oh, Too bad you don't beam a little better up into Scotts Valley. I drove up there last night, and you guys sort of faded as I came up.
I think people
the
are talking about a Scotts Valley station, but I've heard that criticism, and I don't get the station very well where I am on the west side.
They need it up there.
I believe you. Talk to you later, Al.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I want to thank Al for that call, and encourage anyone who wants to call in to 427-3772. We're here at 89.3 FM, and you're listening to Bathrobes Pierre Robert and Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. As I told Al, got the word from Catnip Kate Wells, a local attorney, that they actually won a helmet case in the courtroom of Meat Grinder Mulligan, an amazing decision. Actually, not so amazing. A federal judge has handed down a judgment, and I don't have the specifics on it, but I remember reading about it, that the helmet law was illegal, that they couldn't require a very specific kind of helmet, that they had to take what helmets folks have been wearing, and I don't think I have all the specifics of this clear, but what I did hear from Kate was that a California Highway Patrol officer, Lobb, came in, brought his supervisor, thought he could shut down this fellow with a helmet who had not worn the proper kind of helmet. And Meat Grinder Mulligan, the judge of the traffic department, in an uncharacteristic ruling, told him, "Hey, federal courts say that this law is on hold. If I'm understanding it correctly." Or at least that this man can't be found guilty, and that's it. He's a higher authority. So I hope I get you guys more accurate and specific information next time. And I encourage Catnip Kate, if she's listening, or any other attorney who knows anything about person who knows anything about the current status of helmet law, give a call in and let us know here what's happening. Well, what else have we got here? Spoke with activist Keith McHenry of Berkeley this morning about, there's a lot of brouhahas mentioned earlier about the killing of, I think his name is Aaron Williams. Not sure. Williams certainly is his last name. And I've got some paper here. Might be able to give you some details. Yeah, Aaron Williams kicked and beaten to death, or at least died after a kicking and a beating by San Francisco police officers. All the rage in San Francisco, at least certainly among his friends. According to Keith, who was involved with these demonstrations, there's been no media attention in San Francisco except on the national news. I mentioned this to Lisa earlier. There's a 3 p.m. march today at Baker and Bush Streets regarding the Williams cover-up, regarding the fact that the officers are still on the force that kicked and beat this man. Also interesting, according to Keith, Aaron Williams died at the scene in San Francisco. His dead body was driven by a wagon to Richmond Police Station, some distance away. But they were 1.5 blocks away from Kaiser, 1.5 blocks away from Mount Zion Emergency, and 1.5 blocks away from the Richmond. They were across the street from another emergency room. So there were three emergency rooms within very close proximity, and yet the guy was taken to the Richmond Police Station. Keith suspects foul play. At the police station, the coroner declared no injuries, that Williams had died of a drug overdose. And all the media has done so far, the local media, Channel 7 last night, according to Keith, explained that there were a couple of bad cops. Keith, however, spoke to Williams' sister, who said that a week before, at the same location, police had rushed into her house, screaming for Williams, looking for him. Williams, Keith describes, as a man, a local person liked by the community, who was pursued by the cops for years. So, demonstrations are mounting in San Francisco around the Aaron Williams case. Anybody wants information on this case, give me a call at 423-4833, and I'll pass on to you what I have. What else is happening? Well, Carol Denny, Cornerstone Carol Denny in Berkeley, was another person I spoke with this morning. I usually kind of get in touch with him before the show. And she reports that there's a real dog and pony show going on around changing the codes so that developers can develop in great profusion without much concern for low-income housing, low-income property. Developer has written a letter asking for the Planning Commission for complete cessation of conditions under which he previously agreed to comply with in a fast food place across from where Carol lives. Initially, they got this permission to do fast food. They had to provide guarantees that they would, on noise, security, no late night hours. Now the move is to remove all these restrictions. And of course, the explanation is that since he will be serving cappuccino, he will get a better class of customer and not need security. And that was a little something to make us all smile. There's also a positive story in the Examiner, which I thought I had. That concerned the ATM law in San Francisco. San Francisco in 1993 passed an anti-homeless law concerned with insta-tellers, restricting the rights of people to be around insta-tellers. I think it's within 30 feet in San Francisco. You can't sit or linger near an insta-teller unless you are waiting for a bus, waiting to use the insta-teller, or standing with someone who is. May have this story. Let's see if I can find it. Yeah. Story is headlined, Judge Prunes City's ATM Anti-Loiter Law, and it was Proposition J. And I guess the best thing to do is to read it to you. It's a pretty concise. It's a story by Stephen A. Chin, San Francisco Examiner of today, June 9th. San Francisco Municipal Court judge has watered down a law banning panhandlers from lingering near automatic teller machines, saying that police can only arrest beggars if they are loitering with intent to commit a crime. Actually, it's anybody lingering. You don't have to panhandle, you just have to linger. Here in Santa Cruz, it's illegal to sit down within 50 feet of a money-dispensing machine. So a change machine, a Coke machine, you sit down within 50 feet, get ready to face a ticket of over $100, and if you do it twice, get ready to go to jail. That's our Santa Cruz law. Want to change that law, give a call to City Council, 429-3550. In the case up in San Francisco involving the first person to be prosecuted under the new anti-loitering law, which, by the way, is also an anti-loitering law under consideration here, compliments of Scott Squawkbox Kennedy, was first brought up at a community meeting in the River Flats, or Beach Flats, I'm not sure, whatever you want to call it. They're considering a loitering law. Loitering laws were thrown out by the Supreme Court in 1982. They came back in Berkeley in 1994 with a law talking about you can't linger with intent to sell drugs, whatever that may be. And it's not, there are laws against selling drugs, but now it is a law against having lingering with an intent to sell drugs, which is, of course, another pat on the back for the police. And essentially, it gives them a blank check to walk in and arrest people they don't like, or harass and hassle people they don't like, and ignore those they do. Some people like this idea. I don't. Anyway, in the San Francisco case, Judge Wallace Douglas Wednesday said the Proposition J law was too broad, in that it prohibited innocent activities around the banking machines, but he did not strike down the law altogether. Proposition J, approved by voters in June 1994, made it illegal to loiter or linger for more than 1 minute within 30 feet of cash machines. The only exceptions are people who are using the machines, those who are accompanying someone who is using them, people waiting for municipal transit, or those standing in line to get into a business or theater. Part of Mayor Jordan, that's Juggernaut Jordan, the terror of San Francisco, which has the worst enforcement policy in the state on homeless laws that I've heard of. Part of Mayor Jordan's effort to clean up the streets of San Francisco, the law was intended to put a damper on panhandling and most other non-banking activities around ATMs. So in other words, the public streets are now the private province of the banks, and the public police officers, we get to pay for banks to provide security guards for their customers. In essence, the police become the security guards for the banks. Well, I suppose this is nothing new, but it's not something I want to support. In a 12-page opinion, Judge Douglas issued a judicial instruction or an interpretation saying that mere loitering was not enough to merit an arrest. Rather, the person had to loiter with intent to commit a crime. How police could discern intent in the absence of any outward signs was left unspecified. He also struck down a sentence from the ordinance that made unlawful, constitutionally protected activities, such as leafleting in the designated safety zone. So it is now legal to give away a leaflet 30 feet from an ATM. Well, thank you, Judge Douglas. This is a very important limit on this law, said John Crew, an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union. Given this ruling, the San Francisco Police Department should immediately amend its enforcement policies to make it clear that people playing checkers or sitting or even panhandling may not be lawfully prosecuted. Douglas, the judge, issued his opinion after public defender Grace Suarez filed a demurrer on behalf of Lloyd Maxwell, Jr., who was arrested on August 30, 1994, believed to be the first person to be prosecuted under the new anti-loitering law. All I was looking for, said the public defender, was for it to narrow the ordinance enough to